Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to amazing women. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Janie Lee Grace. Hello, Janie Lee Grace.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
Those lovely tones, radio tones, already showing through. It's great to meet you, and thanks so much for coming. Now, in case we do a bit of a stopping and starting, it's when people are getting out of the lift, but we're in this lovely, cosy cafe booth, so it's fabulous. Right, I'm just going to introduce you here. Janie Lee Grace is a singer, an author, a TV presenter, and a radio broadcaster, a blogger, and even a radio disc jockey. That's a lot of work. Now, we want to talk to you about your books, but first, as a singer, I mean, backing vocals for George Michael, Kim Wilde, and Boy George. Oh my goodness, what was that like?
Yeah, it was fantastic fun, actually. I mean, it seems like an awful long time ago, because it was. But yes, I started my career as a backing singer and got to work with lots of famous people. I did all the Wham tours, which was amazing. And then had my own little 5 minutes of fame with my own hit record as well, literally 5 minutes of fame. They say everyone has it.
I was looking at that on YouTube last night, actually, and saw the fact that you went touring with Wham. That was very exciting. And you toured the world with Wham. As you say, you had your own solo single, Heartbeat Radio, in 1988. And you were in the top 10 in the 90s. Yeah. And I saw that video. What was that video that you did?
Yeah. So the Cola Boy track was got to number 8 in the charts. That was my 5 minutes. That was a real whirlwind kind of success thing, really. It was just a bit of fun. I mean, there were only the 4 lines, 7 Ways to Love. That was it. Yeah, I'd spent my career trying to be a singer, and then I had a hit with just the 4 words. But it was great. Great fun. We had a blast, really. It was cool.
It looked cool, and you look very cool in the video.
Thank you. Yeah, I had this silver, very, very tight vintage silver dress, kind of like a bit like hot pants, except it wasn't hot pants. It was actually a skirt. But it wasn't until we put it on for the Top of the Pops appearance that we realised that it was so ridiculously short that I couldn't actually move. So the dance routine that had been worked out, I wasn't able to do unless I stood literally rooted to the spot with my legs slightly crossed. The game was up. So I had to stand stock still.
So a bit limited dancing, but it came across very well. It's had a lot of hits. Everyone should download that. So can we please talk about your books? You're an author, and I've got a copy of a book here. And you have 5 books on natural living. You have a website called Imperfectly Natural. And is that what you love on beauty, that everything is imperfect?
Yeah, well, I wrote my first book, 12 years ago now, Imperfectly Natural Woman. And I was a little bit ahead of my time, really, actually. If it had been now, I'd be one of the kind of big time bloggers, because I really was kind of writing about all that stuff before everyone was talking about it. You know, before kale had its own publicist, I was writing about it. You know, and coconut oil, as skincare, and far infrared machines, and you name it, I was writing about it back then. And it was I was one of the few people that was doing that, really, bringing it all together. But I knew that I wanted to cover everything to do with holistic living. So not just skincare and beauty, but cleaning without chemicals and treatments and therapies and looking at electromagnetic frequencies and literally everything. But I also knew that I definitely didn't want to preach, because I certainly didn't get everything right. You know, obviously there was the eco angle as well. And I was far from being, dark green. I'm still not. So I really needed to find a title that suggested that I was going to share my story, make some recommendations. There's a ton of research in the book, but I really didn't want to be preachy or make anyone feel in any way guilty that they weren't doing enough. So I hit upon this title, Imperfectly Natural, and it was exactly right, actually, and still is, because I think, we all do the bits we can. We don't get everything right. But if you start with a few bits, you get encouraged and then you can carry on. So, I'm very grateful to that title. It's enabled me to reach an awful lot of women who can start to make a little bit of a difference in their lives without that awful guilt thing that is so often our middle name as women. You know, it's, oh God, if I read that book, I'm not rolling my jumpers upright, and so therefore I may as well give up. You know, and I don't have any of that. Mine's just a case of do the bits you can. It's the small change, big difference approach, really.
I like that, and I like the fact that kale has its own publicist.
Yeah, really.
Do they really? Is that for real?
And broccoli and coconut oil.
Are you kidding me? I want to be that guy. Now, I've got one of your books here, Look Great Naturally Without Ditching the Lipstick, and it's been described as innovative and inspiring ideas for a natural lifestyle. And that is really your ethos, isn't it, in terms of eco and actually and beauty from within?
I think the premise really of everything I do is that there is a natural alternative to everything, and I like to pride myself on finding it. So I think I have found a natural alternative to pretty much everything, and the great news there is that most of the time you can feel better, you can save money in most instances. There are some things that cost you a little bit more. It's kind of swings and roundabouts, but you can definitely tick the eco box without trying. So whereas a lot of people have started with the ethical approach and they've looked at the eco solutions, I start from the natural health and wellbeing approach. And interestingly, I usually find that by doing that, it takes in the ethical side of things automatically without needing to focus on that. If you focused on something being holistic and good for you, and with its roots in nature, as it were, so if it's natural, if it's good for your well-being, then usually you tick the eco box as well. Whereas it's not always exactly the same the other way around, and I know that for a fact because I've interviewed a lot of sort of eco warriors over the years and people who are doing really in truth far more than I would ever be able to do on the eco side of things, which is great. And so they're really, really hot on recycling and plastics and all kind of green issues, carbon footprint and etc. But then you, in passing, happen to ask them, which deodorant they use, and I think you'll find they popped a Superdrug or whatever. Nothing wrong with Superdrug, but don't buy deodorant there. But they do because they hadn't thought about that bit. If the packaging's recyclable, they haven't got further than that. Whereas I believe if you start from what's within, if you look at the ingredients and look at what it's doing to your body, if you choose from that place, you'll usually find that you, tick the eco box.
And your books are called Imperfectly Natural Woman, Imperfectly Natural Baby and Toddler, Imperfectly Natural Home, and you've had 3 pregnancy audiobooks as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that came about because I was just working with this fabulous audio author, Glenn Harold, who does hypnosis. And we just realised at the time that, there's just a massive market for people wanting tips and information on natural pregnancy. And I've had 4 of them and 4 natural births. And so I thought, there's a lot I can share here, but I didn't really want to do the actual hypnosis bit. So we teamed up I don't really promote those products much, but actually, though I say so myself, they're great because you get the kind of the tips of the kind of natural living and all the things you can do. And then you get Glenn's amazing hypnosis tapes, which really got me through my births. And also then we've got one that's joyful birth, blissful birth, we call it, and beyond, and postnatal, because once you've had your baby, the last thing you want to listen to is anything to do with pregnancy. Well, certainly not till next time. So that one is much more about the actual birth process. And then what happens postnatally, which, of course, for a lot of women can be a really difficult time, actually. And we put masses of resources into our pregnancies and we buy every magazine going and we pay for this and pay for that and, put a lot of effort in. And often then you've got the baby and, I don't know, maybe postnatal depression kicks in or whatever it is and somehow there's no resources for you. So that was quite an important one.
That's fantastic. Now, you like to help others, as you say, have a healthy, holistic lifestyle and reduce their stress as well. I know you've spoken at conferences on that. What do you recommend for recommending stress? You've been quoted as an ambassador for heart-centered business, so that's really the heart of the business. Any tips for stress?
Well, that's a big one, isn't it? I think that dealing with your stress is one of the most important things. And of course, in recent years, we now finally all talk about mental health issues and anxiety, whereas at one time, bizarrely, we didn't, did we? It seems incredible now. But I think, finding support is always going to be the answer. I mentioned sort of postnatal depression there, and I know that a lot of women, it's so grateful for online forums and, it's the middle of the night, the baby's awake, it's 2 a.m. There's nobody to call, but you can go on an online forum and find other people in the same situation as you. So I think finding support from people who feel the same way is always going to be very, very important. And then I'm a really big believer in
therapeutic treatments, you know, and so, and they don't always have to be expensive ones. I mean, it's wonderful if you can have aromatherapy massage and those kind of treatments that that really make you feel good on every level and all the senses. But, you know, really simple things like tapping techniques. I'm a big fan of EFT. I'm trained in EFT. I don't use it. I don't really do it professionally, but I can. I have that training. And actually, it can be incredibly useful just to tap on certain pressure points. And amazingly, it can really help to, you know, bring down stress levels. So I think there are lots of little things that everyone can do. But I think one the most important thing is being aware of it, being aware of what are the triggers for you, what is it that causes you to feel stressful, and then putting tools in place, just as you would for anything else. You know, taking back responsibility, really, I think, is the big thing. I'm a really, really big fan of people taking responsibility for their own health and well-being. And, you know, I think the medical profession are amazing and they do a fantastic job. But, you know, I don't ever want to darken their door, you know, unless I really have to. I certainly don't want to pop down there for a headache or feeling stressed, because that's not their job. And, you know, I know that actually I'm going to be resourceful enough to admit, to find out what it is, to look within, and then find the support I need, really.
Brilliant and very wise words. And where do we tap then?
Well, it depends on the issues. But, you know, in EFT, there are certain little tapping routines. I mean, a really simple kind of technique is if you just literally press the side of your fingertip, of your fingernail, just to one side. Haven't had a manicure, clearly. And you just press on the side of your finger. And amazingly enough, if you kind of put quite a bit of pressure there, without hurting yourself, obviously, which you can do very surreptitiously, you can really just go through your fingers, press there, and you can really help to bring down some of your tension. So it's quite a nice one to do if you're on the underground or on a crowded train or whatever, and you just kind of feel that kind of anxiety level rising. You just really calmly press on those fingertips. And obviously breathing. I mean, it goes without saying, doesn't it? We all breathe, but we all actually forget how powerful the breath is when you use it correctly. So I think learning, I think for everybody to learn a few simple breathing techniques is really important. And mindfulness, you know, everyone talks about mindfulness and meditation. I don't know that you need to go and sit cross-legged anywhere for 30 minutes necessarily, but just tuning in to what's going on inside. And when you're in panic mode, you don't do that, of course. But if we can remember to do it, it can help massively.
Very wise. So you are also a host broadcaster on one of the most loved Radio 2 programmes with the lovely Steve Wright in the afternoon. Now, what's he like to work with him?
Gosh, I've been working with Wrighty for so long now. It's ridiculous. We have fantastic fun. I mean, I've been on the show for, must be 19 years, nearly 19 years. How scary is that? And we have great fun. I sometimes wish we could broadcast the bits not on air.
So do we.
No, that would be a show.
Oh, brilliant. I love him too. His style's so natural and funny, isn't it? And you've covered Sunday love songs and even took over when Steve Wright was on holiday in the United States and was forced to remain there due to the volcanic eruptions in Iceland. And not much he could do. How did he handle that then?
Yeah, that was a while ago. Well, I used to be the main dep for Love Songs, so that's another great show to do. That's Steve's show. It's an amazing show, actually, because it's really simple format. But when you present that show, this stack of letters, I mean, masses and masses of letters and emails that just all completely restore your faith in love. You know, it's really incredible. And we get masses of, there are lots where people have married and they're still with their childhood sweetheart. And then lots of these, you know, we title them, They Said It Would Never Last. And then lots where people have found love in later life and after tragedy and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, it's a really heartwarming show to do.
Brilliant. And love's quite a theme here. So you've got the song about seven ways to love, and you've got the love songs, so you're big on love.
Well, I didn't write Seven Ways to Love. I wish I had. I would have made a lot more money for singing those four words.
So you've got a new project, an online radio show on property on Sundays on Health and Home. We touched on eco living earlier. How's the show going?
Yeah, it's great. The station is Property Radio, and that's a digital station, but my show is Health and Home, and it's really a lifestyle show, everything to do with health and well-being and sustainability, you know, both for the person and for the home. So I've got some fantastic guests, actually. I already had lots and got lots lined up, and so we'll cover kind of everything from emotional well-being, health and well-being, and also eco-living. So we'll look at natural cleaning solutions. We'll look at how you can furnish your home in an eco-friendly way. And then everything right through to how we use water in the home. I interviewed this great guy who was talking about the fact that we really do need to, you know, recycle and reuse our rainwater rather than just, you know, flushing beautiful clean water down the loo, which of course is what we do. So yeah, so it'll be a massive range of topics on that. So it's perfect for me, actually.
Your radio and TV work led you to teach media training skills, and you help others with their own PR and media training. How does that work? You've got coaching one-on-one, you've got a book, You Are the Brand.
Yeah, I mean, that came about really because of the work that I do on the radio, because obviously I've been on both sides of the microphone. So I have been both am still the presenter and the interviewer and the journalist. I write for lots of magazines. But on the other side of the coin, as it were, I'm also the person who wants publicity for my stuff. You know, I want to talk about the books I've written as well. So so I really have been on both sides. So I really know what journalists want, what producers want, what interviewers want, and I also know what the person who wants the publicity needs, as it were. So I'm in a good position to do it, but it really came about because of guests that we've interviewed on the radio. Even at national level, you know, you'd be surprised that people come in, you know, maybe authors or whatever, obviously not the celebs, but maybe authors who've managed to get an interview, their publisher has set up an interview. And, you know, their book is great. They're no doubt a fantastic person, but they have zero skills as an interviewee, and they do a terrible job. And it's quite heartbreaking, actually, because the book might be great. And in many cases, they just kind of blow it. And if that interview is pre-recorded, you know, as we are now, we're pre-recording this interview. I hope you won't have to drop this one. But, you know, if it's pre-recorded, sometimes it might even be dropped. So they've wasted that. They've missed that opportunity. They've completely missed an opportunity to speak to 9 million people, you know. And that made me really fed up. I just thought it shouldn't really be like that. Particularly, you know, I like to work with, as I call them, heart-centered businesses. You know, people who are working, doing what they do because it's their passion, because they're doing it from their heart. Often therapists, coaches, authors, those kind of people often gravitate towards me, and I love being able to help them get their message out there. Whether that's how to press release properly, how to, you know, make sure they get in magazines, or as I say, how to be a great interviewee or a great public speaker.
I love that, and the heart-centered business. And as you say, you were ahead of the game and being imperfect, you know, in terms of the description of your product. It's all brilliant, and it was all ahead of the trend, as you say. As we touched on, your one busy lady juggling multiple businesses. Do you like the multiple challenges then?
Yeah, I do. I love doing lots of different things. I mean, I'm my own worst enemy in a sense, in that I take on far too much, and I'm aware of that. I wrote a blog post once. I remembered that when I was a teenager, someone had called me the original Renaissance woman because I've got my finger in so many pies. Because back when I was a teenager, I was really good at sort of singing and dancing and stuff, but I was also an artist. And I remember this teacher sort of saying, oh, you know, you're doing, you know, you like to do all these things. And I said, yes, you know. And then I went to uni and I did performance arts, had a degree in performance arts. So I kind of moved away from the art and the sort of fine art and the writing, and just went into the performance arts. And then, you know, as time's gone by, I've moved into radio. But I don't really want to give any of them up. So I don't know what the answer is, really. I mean, I don't do anything like as much singing and dancing as I'd like. I did a couple of pantos, which was fantastic. And if anyone's listening, yes, please. As long as I get a nice role. But yeah, I like doing lots of stuff. I do like the variety, yeah.
And it's hard work, pantos, isn't it? 8 shows a week or something.
Yeah, I was quite lucky. I did a short one. So yeah, it was 8 shows a week, but it was a fairly short panto. So yes, if anyone's listening, I would need a short panto.
A short panto 8 times a week. So we'll do a shout out for that. Brilliant. So which strong women or men have inspired you?
Oh, gosh.
Steve, obviously.
Yeah, Steve, of course. I mean, off the top of my head, the guy who is, I just think, the most incredible, inspiring person is Eddie Izzard. I love Eddie. He's one of my heroes. I've been on the show for 19 years, and Eddie had been in to be interviewed, gosh, must have been 5 times. And it was always when I was not there. I was always either having babies or on holiday or whatever. And I'd never met him. And so I was actually quite glad, because you know that thing of, if you meet your absolute heroes, if they don't live up to it, it's like, oh, you know, it's desperate. And then finally, about 2 years ago, he came in and I met him. I was so nervous. I mean, I meet celebs all the time. But meeting Eze Izzard was something else. And I just think he's incredible. Anyone that can just do shows in different languages and run however the hell many marathons, 48 marathons or whatever. What is that even about? And I just think he's magical. He's just an absolute one-off. I love him. The person that inspired me many years ago when I wrote my first book was a woman called Leslie Kenton, who I think I'm right in saying has passed away. She was just the most incredible writer. She wrote a wonderful book called Ageless Energy. Really, really incredible writer, way ahead of her time. Mm. If I thought I was ahead of my time, she really, really was. Talking about all this stuff, even in the 80s, she was talking about all the kind of well-being stuff that we talk about now. So she's incredible. And also Louise Hay, who is another woman who's passed, of course, but my publisher is Hay House. And I had the pleasure of meeting Louise, and I mean, what an inspiring, amazing woman. She didn't even start her business till she was in her 60s. How cool is that? Never let anybody say, oh, I've had my time, it's too late. It's never too late. Hay House is a rocking, you know, publishing house. And Louise's thing is about loving yourself, of course. And she talks about mirror work and how we should look in the mirror and say, you know, oh, I love you. And of course, it's not very British, is it? It's not very British. You know, we're always worried the mirror will crack, the stuff that we say to ourselves. But yeah, she's a very, very inspirational woman.
What's been the proudest moment of your career then?
I think probably it would probably have to be my first book, because I never thought that I was a writer. I was talking about stuff on the radio. I was, you know, on Steve Wright in the Afternoon. I was talking about organic food and skincare without chemicals and cleaning your loo without using chemicals, laundry balls and all kinds of things. And lots of people would email me and write in and say, oh, listen, don't let the boys take the mickey. I'm really quite interested. You know, what deodorant shall I buy or whatever? And then a publisher actually came to me and said, would you write a book? And at the time I said, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not really an expert. I'm not an anythingist, you know, and I don't really think that I could write. And she said, well, you know, just have a go. And so I wrote that first book, and it turned out to be really my life's work. You know, I now know I probably could have made 5 books. It was huge. So I wrote this massive book, and the publisher were very, very small. It was a tiny little Welsh publisher. And when the book came out, as anyone who's ever written a book will know, nothing happened, nothing at all. It wasn't in the shops, and nobody bought it, and nobody knew about it. And I was like, what? Really? My baby? Seriously? My absolute life's work? My baby? You don't want it? And I was absolutely gutted. And so I just set about doing my own PR, which is how I've ended up helping people with PR. And I just thought, I just can't stand it. I can't stand that this is not going to go anywhere. So I did a bit of my own PR and managed to get radio interview and various other things. And then the book went to number one on Amazon. And all of a sudden, all the bookshops wanted to order several hundred copies. You know, how surprising was that? So, yeah, I think that was a really proud moment that I'd kind of worked really hard for. And so, that book being a number one Amazon bestseller was really cool.
Wow, that's an amazing story, and, you know, inspiring to lots of people to be able to do that. And how soul-destroying for nothing to happen to it until you took control of it.
Yeah, I think that's the same for most authors, unless you're, you know, J.K. Rowling or whatever. You know, this can be the problem, can't it? You know, particularly now, there are not very many bookshops anyway. And so it can be really hard to get noticed in a busy market.
Well, I'm glad you did. And number one, good for you. So can we talk about your passions then? I mean, eco and sustainability is obviously important to you. What are your other hobbies? What do you do if you ever have any time off with all these children and all these jobs you have?
Well, I mean, I think everything is my work, really. My passion is my work. I do live it all, really. I never switch off, I don't think. But if I do have an option to actually completely chill, I go to the sea. And that's my one kind of thing, really, that recharges my batteries. So, but sadly, I don't live anywhere near it, which is such a drag. My husband doesn't share my passion. Otherwise, I'd move tomorrow, really. So that's a bit of a drag, really. And I have to kind of, I now put it in my diary and make sure that I go. I mean, really, at least every 6 weeks, but I try and do once a month.
Really?
Yeah, I really have to. I have to see the sea. I don't have to be in it. I just want to see it. Even if I just sort of hop on a train to Brighton and walk on the seafront for, you know, a couple of hours and blow the cobwebs away and then get back on a train.
Well, that's lovely. And that's your happy place. It really is.
Totally. Yeah, I feel plugged in again. I mean, if I can get there, I go to St Ives in Cornwall. That's I must have lived there in a former life without any shadow of a doubt. I get there and I, you know, the kind of train goes around that bend and you can see the bay, and it's honestly, it's like I've been plugged in, literally. I'm like alive. It's an amazing place, a real amazing energy there, but it's just too far. It's too far. So but I would love to live by the sea.
You have to get the sleeper train.
Yeah, the sleeper train's really cool, actually. The first time I ever took the sleeper train, I remember Steve Wright saying to me, oh, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. We ever so dodgy. You don't want to do that. And everyone said it'd be awful. So lovely. Somebody knocks on the door, brings you a cup of tea. I thought it was great.
I want to do it. Someone said, go to the theatre, get on the train.
Totally. You can get on at about 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock at night. And it's really, really nice. Yeah, it's a little bit antiquated. I haven't done it to Scotland, but I'd like to take the train to Scotland.
There you are. There's the future. So do you have a mantra for living your life then?
I don't know if I have a mantra, although I do. What I always say to everyone that I work with on the kind of media training side of things or PR side of things is you don't have to get it right. You do have to get it going. And I think that's a big one, because I think so many of us procrastinate through everything. And the amount of people who say to me, oh I'm going to write a book. I'll do it, you know, when the kids leave home, or I'll do it, you know, when I get a month off work or whatever. And actually, you know, the time is now, and for whatever it is. And you don't, it doesn't have to be perfect, which comes back to my imperfectly natural stuff. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it does have to be started. So I suppose that would be it.
I like that too. I mean, a lot of us can take something from that. And actually, you have that philosophy in all your work and in everything that you do, really, don't you?
I suppose I do, yeah. I suppose I do try and look at the holistic approach to everything. I really do believe that there's not a lot of point in, you know, to take the same analogy, eating really healthily if you're not taking notice of what you put on your skin. And there's not a lot of point in meditating, you know, 18 hours a day if you're not kind to other people when you're in the bits where you're not. I do. It makes it quite a pressure, because everyone's always saying to me, why don't you niche down? You know, just do one thing. Just write about skincare. Just bring out your own skincare range. And my answer is, well, I can't possibly do that, because I can't talk about skincare without talking about what you wash your clothes in, because one doesn't work without the other.
Very true. So lastly, what key message would you give to inspire and influence women or men out there? We've got a lot of men that bizarrely listen to our Influential Women podcast to find out why we're influential.
I think it sounds ridiculously woo-woo and naff, but I think, you know, the real key is to actually find out what it is you really want and know that you're good enough. And I don't really mean that in a kind of glib way. I don't think it is enough to just look in the mirror and go, oh, hey, I'm beautiful. But I think actually finding a way to somehow get to that self-love, self-esteem that we all, most of us lack, is the truth. Most of us do lack. Even people who are really quite enlightened have that inner talk going on that tells them, you know, oh, I'm going to go into this business meeting, and actually they're probably going to think that I'm a bit, you know, I haven't prepared enough, or I'm going to write this book, or I'm not a good enough writer, or, you know, the inner talk that we all have. And I think you can't stop that inner talk, but I do think you can find a way of asking, is it true? And starting to notice. And then when you start to notice and you're able to acknowledge that you really are enough, and you know, the good bits about you, then you can start to take responsibility and go after what you want. And I think the two things are kind of hand in hand, because you'd be amazed how many people are striving, but they don't know what it is they want.
It's very wise and lovely to listen to that. And I don't think it's woo-woo at all.
Well, only in the sense that, you know, it still sounds naff, doesn't it? When people say, oh, you need to love yourself. It sounds naff. But actually, it does come back to that It really does, because most people don't. And that's the basis of most, you know, of most anxiety and most issues that people have. We're very able to be generous and kind and, you know, forgiving with everybody else, but we're not very forgiving with ourselves.
So be kinder to ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. In the words of the great Louise Hay, I mean, she used to whip out a little mirror from her bra at all times and just, you know, regularly look in it and say, hey, love you, kid.
Well, she looked flipping amazing, though, didn't she, in those books?
She did, yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant. And that's a lovely note to end on and to encourage everyone to feel. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, Janie Lee Grace, for your inspiring words on natural health broadcast and a whole host of other topics that we covered. It's been really great meeting you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
This Influential Women's podcast is presented by Nikki Bannerman and co-produced with Juliet Nichols. Please keep listening for more guests on our channel and subscribe for free to your phone or inbox on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Comcast, Pocket Cast and Spotify.